I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. A little later, just in time for the Olympics, we'll hear from 9-time gold medalist Carl Lewis. We'll ask him about what it takes to compete at that level, how to get steroids out of sport, and whatever else is on his mind. That's in just a few minutes. But first, we want to talk about the challenge of covering the 2008 campaign. Politics at the presidential level usually touches on hot-button issues at some point, issues like national security, poverty, what it means to be a patriot. Race is sometimes part of the conversation, but in recent years, that's been a subject addressed more through metaphor and innuendo than direct dialogue. But this year, with an African-American man poised to represent a major political party for the first time in the race for the White House, race is obviously on the table. Less obvious, though, is how to cover it in a country in which perceptions of the same facts often vary wildly by race. Joining us to talk about this, NPR's White House correspondent David Green, Ruben Navarrete, a columnist for the San Diego Union-Tribune and CNN.com, and a regular on this program, and Elizabeth Holmes of the Wall Street Journal. She's on the campaign trail following John McCain. Welcome to you all. Thank you for talking to us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Dave, I wanted to start with you. When do you think you first realized that race was part of this race? And I say that sounds like a ridiculous question because, of course, everybody's from the beginning, the Barack Obama story was the first African-American contender with a serious chance to win and so forth. But race didn't start out necessarily being that significant a part of the dialogue. So when do you think you first realized that this was an issue that you had to cover?
I sort of noticed it around the time of the West Virginia primary, sort of late in the game. And I remember arriving there and some of these stories had already come out about Hillary Clinton doing better among white working class voters. And we started to get some of these stories about there being a discomfort with Barack Obama among white voters. And I got in a cab to a Hillary Clinton event. And the cab driver said to me, you know what, I'm really scared of this primary because I'm scared that, you know, Hillary Clinton is going to win West Virginia decisively, which she did. And a lot of people are going to say that West Virginians are racist. And really what it's about is remembering Bill Clinton and remembering that, you know, we were in better economic times and he really cared about our state. But sure enough, after that, the storyline came out that, you know, there are a lot of white voters in a state like West Virginia and elsewhere who were uncomfortable with Barack Obama. And you know, you could see it both ways. And so that's when I remember it starting to bubble up.
Mm. Elizabeth, what about you?
You know, in the primary, since McCain has been here, it hasn't come up a lot. Everybody's kind of wondered when it would come up. He secured the nomination effectively in February, and so it's been several months that he's kind of seen Obama as his general election opponent. But it wasn't really until last week when the McCain campaign just blatantly injected race into the debate. Not so much that they brought it up, but that they were the first ones to call it as such. And it was pretty interesting. It was the day before McCain was scheduled to appear at the National Urban League, an audience of primarily black Americans. So for the campaign to bring it up the day before was pretty surprising, but we all kind of buckled our seatbelts and got ready for a rough ride.
I want to hear more about that in a minute. But Ruben, I want to ask you the same question. Because, you know, you write about the intersection of sort of race and culture a lot, and you often bring up subtexts that you feel are being ignored by
right.
other media. So when do you think you realize that race was going to play as big a part of the conversation as it now is? Or maybe it's a surprise to you, too.
The bell started going off for me, Michelle, right about the time of Billy Shaheen's comments in New Hampshire. Billy Shaheen was the co-chair of the Hillary Clinton campaign in New Hampshire. He's the one who suggested that Barack Obama was a flawed candidate because if he was the nominee for the Democratic Party, Republicans would ask him about his drug use, and they would ask the question, have you ever sold drugs? That, to me, started a whole discussion. I wasn't alone. Other commentators started saying the same thing, that this was, at worst, a racist comment, certainly one that played on a stereotype that African-Americans sell drugs. I think it's significant to point out that Barack Obama got into trouble, so to speak, when it became clear that he was not going to play the role of Carol Moseley Braun or Jesse Jackson or Al Sharpton, all of whom had run for president but never really had a chance to win. Once it became clear that he was playing this game to win and he won Iowa, then I think the gloves came off and lots of people, not just the voters, but a lot of people in the press, a lot of pundits, began to talk about race, either directly or indirectly, not being able to deny that they were seeing it play out before their eyes.
Elizabeth mentioned that kind of the gloves really came off last week. And let's talk a little bit about that. Barack Obama was giving a speech to supporters in Missouri about how he was being criticized by Republicans and the McCain campaign. Let's hear exactly what he said.
They know they've had their turn over the last 8 years and made a mess of things. And so the only way they figure they're going to win this election is if they make you scared of me. You know, he's new. He's doesn't look like the other presidents on the currency. He's got a funny name.
Now you can hear that there's a little sort of condensing there. That was kind of a longer exchange. And as Elizabeth pointed out, the McCain campaign fired back very quickly, saying that Obama was playing the race card from the bottom of the deck. Elizabeth, what exactly pushed the McCain camp's buttons on this, given that he said this before and the audience perceived this as kind of in tongue-in-cheek, as it were?
Yes, and I mean, Obama has said that before, but I think that because it was in the same week that we were discussing an ad that the McCain campaign had put out where his celebrity was compared to that of two white women, Britney Spears and Paris Hilton, that everybody was a little bit on high alert. And then he said it in a way that was a little bit stronger and a little bit more tongue-in-cheek, I think, than it had been in the past. And, you know, this argument and this attack line that the McCain campaign has used for quite some time about he's risky, he's dangerous, making his inexperience into something that could have a little bit of fear involved, they were always teetering on that. And so when it came up in a week that was already, you know, tensions were already flaring, and they just went after it, saying, you played the race card, it just took it to a whole new level.
What about the argument that the McCain campaign, with the ad that you mentioned, it features Obama as a celebrity in the likes of pop princesses Britney Spears and Paris Hilton? Some saw this as a way for the McCain campaign to appeal to white anxiety about black men, if I don't know what else to describe that. And you know, some have sort of written about it that way. How does the McCain campaign react to that criticism? Ruben, give me your take on
that. I think I read Bob Herbert's column and the column of others talking about the whole notion of an attractive African-American man and these white women actresses and celebrities. I think I push it a step further and say this was really sort of a dismissive attempt to say that Obama was an empty suit, that he was famous for the sake of being famous, not really anything there. So I think the ad was ineffective that way. I mean, when you start your ad,
but you didn't see it as a racial thing. You didn't see it as a racial thing.
I did not. I think that the problem John McCain has is that he's a Republican and that the Republican Party has a provable, demonstrable history in terms of playing these kinds of race games to scare people. John McCain, his hands, I think, to be fair, are relatively clean in all of this. He's complained about that. He's stopped people from using, you know, Barack Obama's middle name in speeches and the like, introducing him. But he can't get away from the fact that he can't control everything that's going out there. And what Obama was doing was preemptively saying that they collectively, not just they, McCain and his campaign, but they, people who want to beat me, will come at me by trying to portray me as the other, as different, as foreign, and use race to that end.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with political reporters David Green and Elizabeth Holmes and columnist Ruben Navarrete about how they are handling the issue of race in this presidential campaign. Now, we want to ask you your assessment of the media's coverage of racial issues. Too little, too late, too much? To tell us what you think and see what other listeners are saying, you can go to our blog by going to npr.org and clicking on the Tell Me More page, or you can call our comment line at 202-842-3522. Again, that's 202-842-3522. David, now I want to talk to you about how it is to cover these issues. As we've discussed, oftentimes African Americans and whites have different reactions to the same events, different reactions to the same sets of facts. Do you find it tricky to even frame these kinds of issues? And you're sort of deciding how to write about an issue or how to cover an issue.
It's definitely tricky, Michelle, because I feel like it's just race is this very sensitive issue that can generate a lot of passion very quickly. And in this campaign now, it's just always bubbling under the surface. And I was actually with Obama in Missouri when he made that comment last week. And it didn't strike me as there being any racial undertone when I heard it. And, you know, among the press covering Obama, no one said, my God, he just, you know, he might have played the race card. But as soon as the McCain campaign made the decision to sort of go after him, you know, you saw the punditry just buzzing about this immediately. And it's sort of one of those issues where if a campaign can sort of find a way to tap into that and bring it up to the surface, it can make some headlines and become a really big deal. But so that's one thing that I think we always, at least we try to be careful with. If we're going to sort of bring up race in a story and talk about it, it's not something that's going to be subtle.
Elizabeth, we were talking about this question of whose perception of race should frame the conversation and how much weight to give race as part of a conversation about this campaign. The Wall Street Journal NBC News poll last month showed that 8% of whites surveyed in the poll said that race is the most important factor in the election. Do you find it difficult, Elizabeth, sometimes to navigate competing perspectives? I remember for a lot of people covering the O.J. Simpson trial was very complicated emotionally. You know, on the one hand, this was a celebrity murder trial. On the other hand, race clearly became part of it. Elizabeth, do you feel that, and I'd like to ask all of the reporters this, do you feel like in a way you're sort of at the crux of a perception conflict in a way where the normal rules about whose facts, what's a fact as opposed to a perception, has to be questioned?
Absolutely. I think last week when the McCain campaign, you know, when Rick Davis, the campaign manager, issued that statement accusing, you know, of an accusation of racism, it was very surprising to me and my colleague, Laura Meckler, who cover McCain together, and we had a debate with our editors about whether or not, I mean, how much to put on this, because if it is a political calculation by the McCain campaign to throw something out there, even though it wasn't really accused, it's a hard thing to know when to leap and when to hold back.
Ruben, what about you? You're a columnist, so you have kind of a different mandate there. On the other hand, you confront a lot of these issues head on,
right,
in a way that a lot of other people don't.
Here's what I see. I see that, and I'll just take the media to task for a second. I said before that one of the challenges here is covering race, talking about even some element of racism, whether you see it from liberals or from conservatives or wherever you see it, degrees of ignorance, you know, is he or isn't he a Muslim, all of that, and still trying to find a way not to necessarily perpetuate that. But there's another challenge as well. Most of the decisions in our business are made in New York and Washington. And so I think that one of the big mistakes the media made, got a big, huge egg on their face, when they flat out said that Latinos would not vote for Barack Obama. Lo and behold, now with Hillary Clinton out of the race, Barack Obama is beating John McCain among Latinos 2-1. How does the media explain that? They just got it wrong. The perception was completely off. And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that we try to oversimplify things in our business, and sometimes we reach the wrong conclusion.
Or maybe it's just that there's not enough data on these issues.
Well, it was right before our eyes. I mean, I and others were saying that the same sort of brand allegiance and loyalty that brought African Americans and others to Hillary Clinton were bringing Latinos to Hillary Clinton. That this was really a case of Latinos going for Hillary and not going against Barack Obama. But it was very difficult to penetrate that because I was one syndicated columnist saying that. There were probably 30 saying the opposite.
But
all
wait,
of them
wait,
not
what
Latino.
Conclusion do you draw from this? Is it you think reporters are too credulous when it comes to race?
I think that we as an industry suffer from the fact, because we're inundated with so much information at one time, we look for easy ways of grabbing a handle onto something, conceptualizing it. And when we see, for instance, what happened in St. Petersburg, where you have a group of African Americans challenging Barack Obama to address the black community's issues more than he has, and they're being shouted down by white supporters who do everything but saying, "We shall overcome," that's a really interesting paradox at work there. I don't think most reporters have the skill set necessary to understand the complexity of what's at work there.
David, what do you think?
Michelle, it's a really interesting question that Ruben raises that we dealt with recently, because we decided that one of the storylines that was out there was that there was some tension between African Americans and Latinos. But we felt like it, you know, if we were going to do a series on the Latino vote, that was a question that at least we needed to ask. We wanted to offer this dialogue. And, you know, went to New Orleans and found some really nuanced viewpoints. I mean, you know, I spoke to a Latino owner of a construction company who said that he believes that African Americans are lazy and he doesn't want them working for his company, so he only hires Latinos. You know, and on the other hand, I spoke to an African American woman who said, you know, New Orleans is the gumbo pot. She wants wants to welcome everyone to her city, but she really gets annoyed when some of the Latino immigrants who are working in her building pretend like they don't know English and they speak just in Spanish to get out of doing work. We wanted to bring the views, whatever they were, sort of onto our air, but we thought it was a dialogue at least worth offering to our listeners.
So what did you learn from all that? And I'm going to ask each of you as we conclude to tell me, what do you think you've learned? David, what did you learn from that experience reporting that story? And what do you think you've learned so far about talking about race, thinking about race?
I think I learned that we do have to be very careful not to oversimplify, and that race is an issue where there is a lot of nuance, and there's a dialogue out there right now, but we have to sort of deal with it sensitively and make sure we're asking fair questions, make sure we're not trying to exaggerate or oversimplify, but recognize that it is a backdrop and be ready to handle the question of race when it comes up, because it is going to be there.
Elizabeth, what about you?
I think I've learned, especially in this past week, is that the campaigns are on high alert for it, and whether to respond to it, to not respond to it, and that it will continue. And I'm sure this will flare up again before November. And it's something that, as a reporter, you have to be ready for and ready to cover and ready to jump on. But at the same time, you, like David said, you have to have that kind of nuance and that sensitivity to the complexity of it.
Ruben, final thought?
What I learned is that this is still really a black and white country. It's true that Asians are the fastest growing minority in the country and that Hispanics are the number one minority in the country, but don't let that fool you. This is still a black and white country. The narrative, the dominant narrative of the United States of America is black and white. And what I learned is that there are not enough couches in America to let all those white folks deal with all their various issues about how black people have been treated for 200 years. And I think every time there's an eruption, Jeremiah Wright was, I guess, case in point. Every time there's an eruption, I learn more about this country than I do about Barack Obama. I learn more about myself, my own prejudices, than I do Barack Obama. This has really been revealing, I think, of how we treat the race issue in this country.
Ruben Navarrete is a columnist for the San Diego Union-Tribune and CNN.com. Also, he's a regular on this program, on our barbershop segment. He joined us from San Diego. David Green is NPR's White House correspondent. He joined us from member station WUIS in Springfield, Illinois. Elizabeth Holmes is a political reporter with The Wall Street Journal. She joined us from Newport, Michigan, where she's with the McCain campaign. You can hear all that hubbub in the background. So thank you for taking a break to talk to us. I thank you all so much for speaking to us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Pleasure, Michelle.